Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. Today, I just want to take a quick look at Jews and the things that Jews do, especially against the white right. It's really the white right that I want to focus on, because people in the white right are constantly feeling like they're not going anywhere, we are losing, everything is not working out, it's hopeless, we're going to be defeated, etc. So what I just want to do today is I just want to do a bit of a discussion about Jews and the way that they approach some of the problems of destroying us and why it works, and that you are dealing with a high-level enemy. The big problem when dealing with the Jews is that you are dealing with a group of people who've merged into the Western world over a long, long period of time. And these Jews are very experienced at living in the Western world among whites. And they've been everywhere. They've been in Spain, Italy, France, Germany, Britain, Poland, you name it. They've been everywhere. And wherever they go, they merge into the culture. They merge in amongst whites. Those Jews speak Spanish fluently. They speak German fluently. French, English, Polish. They know those languages fluently. And they know the cultures very well. They've lived for decades, and in many cases, hundreds of years in those countries. They know those countries and those whites inside out. That, I have to repeat, is why I keep telling people Jews are very dangerous. They know us like the back of their hand, and they know our strengths, and they know our weaknesses, and they know how to push our buttons. Plus, on top of it, Jews engage in business. In order to do business, you've got to get people either to become partners in a business, or you've got to get customers. Jews know how to sell. Jews know how to do advertising. Jews know how to do psychology. They know how to close the deal. There's a woman that I still need to do a video about. It's a Jewish woman that I knew, that I met when I worked at the bank. And she was good at selling, very good at selling. But I want to do a separate video about her, because she's quite a character. And I learned a lot by speaking to her, because she gave me an insight into how not only the Jews function, but let's call it the upper classes of South Africa function. So Jews know people. I just cannot emphasize this enough. And of all the people they know whites the best. And that makes them very, very dangerous. And large numbers of them, most of them, can pass for being white. And they can move around among whites, deal with whites, and whites will regard them as the same people. In fact, in going through Hitler's Mein Kampf, I saw that Hitler also had seen Jews the way that I saw Jews when I was young. Hitler said that when he first discovered Jews, he saw them as being Germans, just Germans with a different religion. It took him quite a while to really study them, to begin realizing that here is something different. This thing is different, and that's the big thing. Jews can, for the most part, fool the vast majority of whites, 80%, 90% of whites, 80 to 90% of whites in any country, probably even 90 to 95% of whites when they are not awakened, can work with Jews. Jews can be their neighbors. Jews can deal with them. And you'll notice nothing different. And when I came into contact with Jews, either as a child and a teenager in Rhodesia, or later when I worked in South Africa, I just saw Jews as whites who have another religion. That's how I saw them. And I just saw them as a group of whites who aren't Christians. That's how I saw them. Oh, okay, so there are these whites who don't do Christianity, they don't believe in Christianity, and that's that. It took me a very long time to realize that you are looking at someone who looks somewhat like you. But when you get closer to them and you really start checking them out, you'll start seeing how different they are. And for me, the biggest takeaway was the Jewish mind. The Jewish mind is a very alien thing. So their physical bodies may look like us, but their minds are very alien. Hidden inside that Jewish mind is something very, very different. And that hidden stuff is very dangerous too, because you don't know all the things that are hidden in the Jewish mind. I've mentioned before the Boer Nazi, Leon Hart, and that Leon used to describe the Jews as being Asiatics. And I've described them as being like Martians, people from another planet. And they may look somewhat like you, but what's inside their head is so different. The mere fact that these people function through secrecy and all sorts of quiet stuff, and they stick together quietly, etc. All of those things should actually be big red flags. Because white Christians, for example, are open, and all their stuff is open. And if you want to become a Christian, you just pitch up and you go and you join them, etc. The fact that this little group of people have to have all kinds of special arrangements, and they have all kinds of ways of moving beyond the rules or having the rules changed just for them, these things should be huge red flags. Let me just show you a few images, and then I want to discuss the core topic today, which is about Jews waging war on whites. But the kind of war that I'm talking about is not the external war. It's not like getting France and Germany to go to war against each other. I'm talking about the internal war, the war inside a country, inside a society. The bottom line is that these people are sophisticated, and they know how to play with people as groups, and they know how groups function. And in this video, I want to tackle the topic from the herd point of view. You may have seen my previous video that I did where I discussed whites as herds and humans as herds. And I gave you some insights into how Hitler saw whites as herds. So take, for example, in the images on the screen in front of you, there is something from the time of the Nazis where the Germans point at the Jew and they say, "He causes wars. He is the troublemaker." Now, the Germans were talking about wars between nations, but Jews have got a process of getting into a nation. And that process of, let's call it, Jewish colonization of a nation is itself an interesting process. And that process is the process that's burning all of us. Because the people who are causing the trouble in Western nations are not Jews who are outside the country or Jews who are just rich. The Jews inside the country are your prime troublemakers. The Jews inside your country do things against you. And that's really what I want to discuss today. So the thing is to see the Jews as waging a war. They wage a war and a power struggle inside your country. At the moment, the biggest such internal war is inside the United States. But in the time before Hitler, Jews were busy playing these games inside Germany. Because Germany, Imperial Germany, was very much like America. Jews had money, Jews had freedoms. Jews could do whatever they wanted, and when they did, it was big trouble for the Germans. And that is where Hitler started awakening to the damage that he saw Jews doing in Austria, Jews doing in Germany. That's when Hitler began to realize, here's this alien force, and this alien force is here in our country. And for example, in World War I, in Mein Kampf, Hitler was talking about Jews and how they were abusing. This is all just a rerun of America, of Britain, of everything. Jews were just abusing the military system, and Jews were opening companies, doing all kinds of nefarious deals. And there's a quote where Hitler says, all the clerks were Jews, and all the Jews were clerks. And he was referring to them being clerks inside the German army. So the Germans are on the front line, taking bullets in the head, bullets in the chest, shells falling on them. Meanwhile, the Jews are sitting behind the scenes. The Jews are functioning not in the trenches. The Jews are functioning in all the admin and all the other aspects of the army, logistics, etc. And there the Jews are working with money and all that kind of stuff. So, looking at the screen again, on the right is a meme. And this meme is actually based on a quote from Dr. Goebbels, the ever awesome Dr. Joseph Goebbels, where he said, if the Jews were to win this war, mankind would sink into eternal darkness. And that pretty much also is a direct reflection of Hitler's assessment of Jews. In Mein Kampf, Hitler makes it clear that there are two forces on earth. The one force is the Aryan force, which is basically whites, because Hitler said that America, for example, is an Aryan power. That's how Hitler saw America. So Hitler sees whites as the Aryan power, but he sees Jews as the total opposite. And that is where Hitler then started saying, if Jews were to rule the world will go down, mankind would become so dysfunctional that civilization would basically cease to exist. There's even a place somewhere where I think Hitler said that the earth would become lifeless if the Jews won. And I must tell you, when I look at that, I don't think it's an exaggeration. So this is just an example of a good meme where you can see the white girls behaving like sluts and garbage, welcoming the refugees. Men are feeding babies or breastfeeding babies. Girls are going out with non-whites. Jews are in porn. You got the Jew who launched Playboy, Hugh Hefner, taking all the pretty white girls, turning them into whores. You know, that is Jewry at work. Jewry busy working on the country. You got credit, you got business, you got all the other stuff that is destroying society. And I would add to that, I would say, I've come to the conclusion that there are aspects of capitalism that I call junk capitalism. We'll visit that. And I've seen more and more examples of junk science. Jews are busy destroying America and destroying civilization. If you look on the screen in front of you, you'll see another interesting quote. This is from Houston Stewart Chamberlain. I've not dug into his history, but he's clearly a man who knows his stuff. And the quote is, not only the Jew, but also all that is derived from the Jewish mind corrodes and disintegrates what is best in us. Houston Stewart Chamberlain nails it, okay? If that were the only lesson you ever learn about Jews, then that's the most important lesson. Everything about Jewry works against us. Exactly the same way that Hitler said that the Aryan is a force for positive, is a force for moving upwards. The Aryan creates civilization. The Aryan takes humanity to new levels. But the Jew is the total opposite. You've got this light versus darkness concept. The white man builds, creates, expands, grows, lifts up, solves problems. The Jew is the total opposite. He creates problems. He corrodes. He disintegrates. He tears things apart. That's his natural nature. That's what the Jewish animal does. I must tell you that everything that comes from that little quote is so on the money. Because Houston Stewart Chamberlain is saying it's not only just the Jews and their presence, but even everything that comes out of their heads. Everything that comes out of their heads is bad. It corrodes, it disintegrates, it sends us backwards. Ah, here is the Jew. No, diversity is good. No, feminism is good. You need to get the women to be free from the men who love them. The women need to be free because the men have them in chains. A woman is better off without children. She just needs a job and a new career. Everything that comes from these freaking people takes you downhill, and every thought derived from their thoughts leads to trouble. It's like I've said, take South Africa, for example. All black politics in South Africa is derived from communism. From Marxism. It comes from Jews. It is Jewish thinking. That's where it comes from. And all you have to do is look and see as the lower humans gained ground in South Africa and worked against the whites, destroyed civilization. And I was just writing a note just today to someone. I want to post it. And I was saying, here where I am, we've had water problems for the last couple of days. Water pressure's been very low. Water even stops coming out the taps. Luckily, I dug my own well a couple of years ago. The digging of my well is something I need to maybe put up the photos. I went on a crazy lunatic mission to do that. And I did a couple of homemade things. And I'm actually sitting with lots of water. I've got more than enough water. I do my own thing. I can fix most of my own water problems. If a pump doesn't work, I know how to fix it. And the last 2 days, I've been functioning with my pressure pump on. And you won't believe how I connect my water to my house. I just use a hose pipe. I'll take some photos and you'll see my homemade solution to the water problem. So I just turn off the tap, disconnect from the system, and I've got water. The only expense is it costs me electricity. I have to pay for electricity. We never had water problems. Never. For your water to stop running was a rarity. Now in Johannesburg, it's becoming more and more common. Whole suburbs go without water, sometimes for a week or two, and the problems stay. And the electrical problems lead to water problems, and so it goes on. The lower man is a useless fool. But in many ways, nature is actually at work. And you know what? Nature is actually saving whites, I must tell you. That's a separate topic. But everything that comes from these demented ideas lead to big problems. And Houston Stewart Chamberlain is dead right. Now, what I really want to just focus on a little bit in this video is notice the sophisticated methods of the Jews. Take, for example, this meme that someone made that came from Alex Jones. They used an Alex Jones thing for this. I don't know why, but they went and stuck an InfoWars Alex Jones super male vitality thing in the middle of this. I don't see how it relates to this, because Alex Jones doesn't even talk about Jews. But anyway, this meme is otherwise very awesome. So this meme says, it's the Midnight Jew Crew making hate crimes great again. And it shows a Jew at the Shalom Temple, busy quickly defacing it with a swastika. Another Jew is busy going to the graveyard and pushing over a Jewish headstone so that the Jews can blame the Nazis. The white right. This is one of dozens of examples of how the Jews use all kinds of sophisticated methods against us. And they don't just play the game on a one-by-one level. They actually play it at several levels. So Jews don't just target one person. Jews will go and target the whole herd. So in this example, Jews are going and committing crimes against them, committing hate crimes against them, so that they can blame the white Nazis, the white right, the white supremacists. You could say that this is the nerd version of what is known in military terms as pseudo-warfare. This is like the Rhodesian Salu Scouts, or troops pretending to be something else. That is what Jews are doing. And then Jews run around and they say, oh, we're being attacked, we're being attacked. There are these people who hate us. Look at what they're already doing to us. But the Jew is playing to an audience. And in the West, most of that audience is other whites. So the Jew runs around and he's saying, oh, I'm the victim. I'm the victim. I am the one who's being attacked. I didn't do anything. The Nazis hate us. And look at what the Nazis are doing. And it's just Jews playing the game. But when they are playing the game, they are actually dividing us. They are taking a group of us, the white right, and they are setting out to make people think that the white right is breaking the rules, that the white right is hurting these innocent people. And by doing this, they are able to cause division and schisms among us. That is a very important thing. This is why I keep telling people that Jews know us too well and they're very dangerous. So when they do these kinds of things, then they are quick to say, oh, the Nazis did it, the white supremacists did it, the racists did it. And they run around blaming us and accusing us of stuff. Meanwhile, we didn't do anything. But if we go to other whites and we say, no, we didn't do this, then the other whites are going to say, oh, stop lying, man. Stop lying. And the Jews have already created a schism among us. And in that last video about Hitler, I pointed out that Jews also use the herd methods to drive people away from Hitler. They come and they hit Hitler in many different ways so that the herd is driven away from Hitler. But they are doing exactly the same with the white right. They're running around, ah, the Nazis, the racists, they're criminals. So immediately, other whites are also saying, oh goodness, maybe I shouldn't join that group, because that group seems to be a bunch of low-class whites, and that group of low-class whites, look at what they're already up to. Now, if the Jews can get some of these people jailed or charged by the police, even better. Because then the herd looks at this, the rest of the whites look at this, and they say, oh, look at that. That guy had to go to court. That guy was arrested. He was fined. He lost his job. That other guy was jailed. The herd, the other whites, the herd becomes afraid when they see what comes of this. But meanwhile, all of this is just a concoction, and it's just a bunch of hocus pocus done by the Jews. But it A, divides us, B, creates a bad image. The image spreads among other whites. Other whites start moving away from the white right. And that is the goal of what the Jews wanted. They need to slander someone. They need to make them look bad, make them look either evil or make them look like they can't control themselves. And then the Jews run around, oh, the Nazis did this, the racists did this. Meanwhile, it's just a trick. But that trick, if it gets the right publicity, and rest assured, the Jews will see to it that it does get the right publicity, then it causes a schism among us. And it makes the white right look bad. The white right always stays small, and other whites move away from the white right. So it's actually a very sophisticated trick, and it harms us tremendously. And now for us to go and to convince the rest of the whites that, you know what, we never did that. We didn't do this. The Jews lied about this. It's hard to do that because the Jews made the first move. So that gives you an example of just one of many ways in which Jews use a technique, use it in a big and bold way, and it has a big effect on the herd of whites in that nation. It divides us, and it already starts scaring huge numbers of people away from the white right. If you look at the image on the screen in front of you, you'll see an old image from the time before World War II, when the Jews were busy trying their utmost to start World War II. And back then, the Jews were even very open about it, where they said, Judea declares war on Germany, boycott all German goods. So there you can see also, though that was international, but there you can see also the boldness of these people, and they were all over the world, and they were busy saying, stop buying German goods, Germans are evil, Germans do these things against Jews. Of course, they leave out all the stuff that the Jews did to the Germans, all the naughty, naughty things that Jewry did to Imperial Germany. But there again, you see them coming out and they get everyone else. And who's going to do the boycotts? It's going to be whites across the world. Whites in America, whites in Britain, whites in Canada, whites in Australia and South Africa are now going to boycott German goods. And it also gives you some insight into how these people function. They will come at you in many, many ways. It's not just a Jew with a gun. The Jew comes at you in every way. The Jew will hurt you in little bits. It's sort of death through a thousand cuts. And it's based on convincing other people, other whites, again, splitting the whites, convincing other whites that Germans are evil. Here they are driving the wedge between whites. And this kind of thing was very successful. And you know, when I look at that, it's amazing. The Jews even admit that they declared war on Germany. I actually need to revisit this topic as well because of some stuff that I discovered. But the Jews were hard at work, long before Hitler even fired one shot in World War II. The Jews were hard at work trying to get the whole world to fight the Germans. And all the Germans are trying to do is to take control of their own country again. That's all. It's an internal issue between Germans and Jews. And instead of leaving the Germans alone to sort out their Jewish problem, now everyone gets to interfere in Germany. Same thing as South Africa. Instead of leaving the whites of South Africa alone for the whites to deal with their internal racial problems, Jewry brings in Russians, Americans, British, everybody else, even Europeans, to come and to destroy the whites of South Africa. But the big takeaway from this is Jews are so familiar with us that Jews can run around and say to other whites, don't support that. They act as if they are a valid part of Western civilization. They are bold and they act as if they are a valid part of Western civilization. And they get white people to act against other white people. And that's what they're doing. They're doing this on a grand scale. They're working with the entire herd. They're telling the whole herd, listen, boycott German goods. Why must the German goods be boycotted? In reality, because Jews are irritated with Germans. Those Germans aren't doing anything else to any other whites. But Jewry is so bold, so confident, so in your face, so well embedded in Western civilization. And you will find this kind of stuff everywhere. South African Jews were prime movers behind things like the anti-apartheid movement. Apartheid, it's a terrible, it's evil. We must stop this thing. Now Americans and Canadians and Australians now suddenly have to start looking at South Africa and saying, what the hell are those whites in South Africa getting up to? Meanwhile, if they left those whites alone, everything would be fine. The white South Africans are just doing what is best for them, and what is best for them is best for the Western world. They are not moving out of line. Same with Hitler, same with the Germans. It's an internal issue. Whites are in control of Germany. Whites are in control of South Africa. Leave those whites alone. They are not harming other whites, and the actions they are taking are not going to harm the West. But jury is turning whites against whites. And they go on to tell other lies and to talk other nonsense. And later on, white Americans are busy killing Germans. But who started all these campaigns? Jury is so well embedded in the West. It's a very bad thing, and it's a very dangerous thing. Even now, it's a very dangerous thing. Here's a classic photograph from South Africa. This is actually a meme that I put together. And there on the right, you can see there's a black communist terrorist, Nelson Mandela. Black communist terrorist who likes to fight whites and kill whites. And who does he embrace? Here he is, a communist, and yet he embraces this very, very wealthy Jewish woman. She lived in Houghton. Houghton is like the old money suburb of Johannesburg, and he embraces her. She should technically be the enemy as well, because he's a communist, so he should be out to destroy the rich. But no, she's Jewish, so he's all for the Jews. And suddenly you see two very unlikely, or what would appear to be unlikely, allies. And who's their common enemy? The whites of South Africa. The one on the left is just an example of how all those communist lies moved around among blacks, and you later got blacks in recent times who said stuff like this. This was a black who said, "I want to cleanse this country of all white people. They deserve to be hacked and killed. You must be skinned alive and your children used as fertilizer." But who started this entire uprising of non-whites against whites? And you will see Jews all over the show, especially in communism. All the main Jews were communists. But here she was faking it. Helen Suzman was faking it as a, quotes, good liberal. Meanwhile, behind the scenes, that's the real game that's going on. And in this case, Jews were playing other races against the whites. So grab the blacks, grab the Indians, grab the coloreds, warn them against the whites, destroy the whites. The whites need to be destroyed. And again, it should show you how bold they are. They think big, and they feel very, very comfortable everywhere. The Jews function with comfortable ease in the capitals of the Western world, whether it is London or whether it is Washington, or in those days, whether it is Moscow. Doesn't matter. Jews have got their claws everywhere. And when they do things and they start strife between people, they do it on a big scale. They don't think small, they think big. And these scum worked behind the scenes to destroy whites in South Africa. And they are chameleons, and they just quickly swap over, and then they are suddenly big buddies with the blacks. So one day they are, quotes, whites, and they're in parliament, in business, they live in all the suburbs where the whites live, and then just like that, they just quickly flip over, and the next thing you know, there they are, embracing our enemies that they created. And all the lies about South Africa, apartheid, the cruelty of the whites, the evil of the whites, all that is Jewish and liberal garbage. And Jews played a huge role in that. But notice they play big games. They are playing big games. Even though these games, like the German one and this one, is international, but you'll see that Jews function like this everywhere. They are very, very comfortable working big. Whether they work big inside South Africa, inside America, or between peoples in different countries, they are working away, and their target is white. And they will either split whites or create enemies for whites, or split whites and create other racial enemies for whites, like they're doing in America, where they split whites and they bring blacks in as well to come and smack whites as well. It's the same old thing. These people are very, very well placed in Western society to cause big trouble between herds of people and to make herds of people hate each other and, in some cases, kill each other. There is an excellent quote from Charles Lindbergh. There are two excellent quotes from Charles Lindbergh, who tried so hard to use his fame and his position to help whites, to help white America, and stop the nightmare that Jews are creating for the Western world. So let's read these quotes from Charles Lindbergh. The first one on the left is, "We are disturbed about the effect of the Jewish influence in our prayer, radio, and motion pictures. It may become very serious. Fulton Lewis told us one instance where the Jewish advertising firms threatened to remove all their advertising from the mutual system if a certain feature were permitted to go on the air. The threat was powerful enough to have the feature removed." The next one is, and that was from 1939. The next one says, "The pressure for war is high and mounting. The people are opposed to it, but the administration seems to have the bit in its teeth and is hell-bent on its way to war. Most of the Jewish interests in the country are behind the war. They control a huge part of our press and radio and most of the motion pictures." And that is in May 1941. What is nice about this set of quotes from Charles Lindbergh is that he's telling you their mechanism, that here are Jews in America, they've embedded themselves in America, they've gained power in America, and they are doing business in America, but they are so used to functioning in countries and using business and working with people that as these Jews need to, they suddenly turn around and say, "We control certain advertising, and if you put that on the air, we will withdraw advertising from the mutual system." They are functioning inside businesses, they have customers, but they have power. Their customers don't know what they are saying. Their customers don't know that they are making this threat. But the Jews have got power. By having these firms, they now have power. And in that instant, they make a threat. And the threat is taken seriously, and the whites back down. This alone, again, should show you how deeply embedded these people are in the Western world. They occupy all kinds of positions, and they've got different firms, different occupations, etc. But they can, in an instant, know how to use their power to threaten other whites. And then these whites back down. So whatever it was that was going to appear on TV or in the mass media, if that stuff had gone out, it would probably have been some kind of truth, and it would probably have freaked other whites out, and Americans would have turned against the Jews, or Americans would have started asking questions and started saying, "Ah, so this is what's really going on." And here the Jews come, and the Jews in an instant threaten this system, and the next thing is the whites back down and the truth is suppressed. And you should ask yourself, in the modern world now, how many times behind the scenes have Jews done things like this, where somebody was going to expose a Jew, or someone was going to expose Jewish behavior, or someone was going to expose pedophiles, or someone was going to expose something linked to Epstein or JFK or 101 other things. And behind the scenes, Jews are making moves to stop a thing, and that the truth could have come out. Maybe there were 1,000 times when more truths and part of the truths could have come out, but this powerful Jew made that move. That group of powerful Jews made that move. And then the quote on the right, where he says the government is hell-bent on going to war. What Charles Lindbergh might not have known is that it's not just the government, but that inside the government are lots of communist Jews around Roosevelt. So it's not actually the government that much at that point in time. But at that point in time, there were a bunch of Jews around Roosevelt, and they are influencing him. Those Jews might later even have left and moved on or parted ways and done something else, either in the the US government or gone to business or something. But at that point in time when it was important, those Jews were playing a big role and Jewish businesses were also backing it. So you've got different things. You've got Jews pressing the button, stopping themselves from being exposed on radio and TV on the one hand. And on the other hand, you've got Jews busy pushing the government into war against Germany. It should show you again, these people are well respected. They are high in society. They've got lots of wealth. They move with ease among the leaders of society. They move with ease among the businessmen. They move with ease among the politicians. Their word has value and they use it. If anything, this set of quotes from Charles Lindbergh should show you how well embedded they are in America. That they can move around, talk to people, people trust them, whites trust them, whites listen to them, whites listen to their ideas, etc. This is actually horrifying. It shows you that they get into government and they are busy abusing the government to cause a war, which is not only going to get Germans and Italians killed, it's going to get Americans killed. Americans are going to get killed in a war that Jews are pushing for. And it shows you also, in the other quote, how Jews are able to hide important facts. And they hide those facts from getting to the herd. If the herd got those facts, the herd might have sat up and thought, this is something. The fact that the Jews went as far as to use a threat, that's got to show that whatever it was that was going to go out was going to have a big effect on the American herd. And so Jews knew that they have to stop this thing. They've got to stop this thing because this is going to wake up many Americans and turn Americans against them. They need to stop this, and that's why they probably went to that length. They probably put on a big act, made a lot of loud noise among wealthy people, and they did enough that they scared people enough to back down. And I'll bet you things like what you're seeing in both of these quotes, I'll bet you lots of this stuff is going on in the world all the time. And in that other video I did about Jews knowing what whites are going to do, in that video I showed you examples of Jews in France suddenly hauling in 300 leaders, gathering them together to sit and discuss the fake problem of anti-Semitism. But in all of these different things, you should be able to see that Jews operate big, Jews operate boldly, Jews walk around the halls of power. And it should show you that if you've got Jews in government, they'll abuse government and use government for the furtherance of their interests. Jews will use businesses for the furtherance of their interests. Imagine if, for example, the Jews had to first get the permission of the people who were using their advertising companies. Imagine if the Jews had to tell their customers, listen, we want to stop this thing from going out via the mutual system. Are you okay with that? Chances are the vast majority of those businesses would probably have said no. But the key thing here is that Jews are very well embedded in society, that they know that they can quickly make a threat and that they can make this threat without anyone else even really being aware. And if they make the threat and they target a certain person or a certain group, that it's between them and these people will back down. But if what the Jews were doing was known to the rest of society, people would be probably angry, horrified, etc. But Jews focus on power. And it should show you that even Jews having businesses, even businesses where you've got a Western system and it's capitalist and everyone can own a business, that even allowing Jews to have businesses, even allowing them to get into government, that you know what? That's not a good idea. That is not a good idea. They will abuse any power. Whether they are clerks in the German army, whether they are business people, whether they just have certain jobs and certain things, there's not an aspect of the Western Western world that Jews will not abuse. And they are so comfortable, so embedded, so respected. They've got jobs, they've got money, they've got bank accounts. These people, at the end of the day, these people are so well embedded in the West and in America. And they just go to work, man. They will abuse everything and turn anything so that it benefits them. The values of the parasite, as per my Jews or Parasites video, the value of the parasite, what is important to the parasite, that is more important than what is of value to the rest of society or the whites. Just sit and think about that. It's horrific. And these people play us against each other, and they know how society works. They know how the herd works. And when they come at you, they hit you with one out of a huge bag of tricks from centuries of them playing in other countries, centuries of them doing things in different countries at different times. They know how people work. They know how to use this thing and that thing. And they know how to use power and abuse power. And there's literally not a thing you can allow these people to do that they won't abuse. If they are in the military, they will abuse it. If they are in government, they will abuse it. If they are in business, they will abuse it. And all you have to do is just look at other examples and you'll see whether they are doctors, dentists. It doesn't matter. They are so well embedded and they know how to use power and they know how to use it against large groups of people. And they have got enough respect in society that people take them seriously, and other millionaires, other billionaires, other politicians, other people who are high ranking will actually defer to them and listen to them. And so when Jews say, oh, they're these guys in the white right, they're a bunch of criminals, they're a bunch of scum. Now, the white right has got severe problems because Jews see to it that in the same way that they vilify Hitler in every conceivable way, they vilify Hitler in every conceivable way so as to try and ring fence Hitler. They vilify Hitler, Hitler's stupid, Hitler's a creep, Hitler's this, Hitler's that, Hitler is failure, Hitler is not Western, and so on and so on. They basically come with all kinds of junk. And they ring fence Hitler so that very few people will penetrate that fence and actually go and say, maybe I should take a closer look at Hitler. And you'll find one person in 1,000 will go and take a closer look at Hitler and say, oh, you know, Hitler, actually, he's nothing like they said he was. He's actually a cool dude, or he's a great dude, or he did this, or he's awesome. Now, they do the same thing with the white right. They try to ring fence the white right and vilify us in every way. And it has a very powerful effect on the herd. And I've seen it myself. When the Jews came at me with court stuff, when the Jews hit me with legal stuff, the Jews were quick to also dash out and to go to the mass media and to publish stuff. And immediately, people ran away from me. Lots of people ran away from me. People even turned on me. People that had gotten along with me and had dealt with me suddenly turned on me. And they said, oh, but you said this about the Jews. And they believe the Jewish version, but they don't believe my version. I'm turning around and I want to say to them, listen, the stuff the Jews printed in the mass media about me, it's not true. I didn't say that. I didn't do that thing. But it doesn't matter. The Jews have moved in, they've made big claims, and they've run off to the mass media and had the mass media publish this and publish that. And hidden amongst the facts and the semi-facts, they threw in their lies, and other whites move away from me, and other whites run away from me. And I've seen this. I've seen how, being in the white right, how you can have something, and you are making good headway, and you're doing well, and then something something happens, and then you see the herd scattering. Prior to the Jews coming at me, I saw other instances where people would scatter, where people would quickly get scared. Something would happen. Something might happen. Something might happen to someone else in the white right, and that person gets into trouble. And the white right's been growing. The white right's been getting stronger. And then something happens to someone, and suddenly all our support just runs away. I'll give you an example where I saw that happen in a big way. In my early days of activism, when I was running African Crisis, there was a guy who suddenly popped up on the scene, and he called himself Neil Watson. If you look on the screen in front of you, you'll see some images from here in South Africa. So let me tell you quite a fascinating story from the early days of the internet in South Africa. I had become an activist and I was busy doing my thing. And I was writing about politics, farm murders, crime, etc. And lots and lots of hard work. And I was slowly building up my support base. When suddenly, out of the blue, there's a new kid on the block. Almost, I suppose, in the way that the Daily Stormer came along after other websites had been around for some time, you know, where you've got Stormfront and other websites that have been there for an age, and suddenly Daily Stormer pitches up. This is exactly what happened in South Africa. This was before the Zuidlanders. And suddenly this guy pitched up. I can't remember exactly what his website was. I'm not going to do a whole history on this guy's website. But suddenly a guy pitched up and he called himself Neil Watson. He set up a website and he focused on crime. And he focused on crime, the crime in South Africa, and he was publishing stuff. But not only was he publishing stuff, he was actually managing to get the mass media to start giving him some exposure. This would be something like the Jew faggot Matt Drudge. The Jew faggot Matt Drudge with his one-page Jew website, but the New York Times and everybody else sends some traffic his way and he becomes a big name. All of a sudden, this guy pitches up. He's called Neil Watson. We don't know what he looks like. And Neil Watson sets up a website and he starts tackling the crime issue. And I remember one of his cool things that he put out was, he said, if you come to South Africa, someone could kill you with a hammer, or something like that, or like your mother could get killed with a hammer. Someone will come and bash your head in with a hammer. And this Neil Watson guy set up a crime website, tackled crime, and spoke the truth about crime in South Africa. But what was amazing was that, unlike guys like me who don't get support and publicity from the mass media, Neil Watson got big support from the mass media. And so Neil Watson drew a huge audience, and Neil Watson was bold, and he was talking so powerfully about crime. And all of this was just done on a website. He was just posting things on a website. We didn't have audio and video on our websites at that time. I don't think YouTube even existed. And so he was just writing on his website, on his blog, and it was working. White people in South Africa, Then already were sick to death of black crime. And Neil Watson was getting a big following. It was freaking big, man. And Neil Watson was getting support. People were donating to Neil Watson. And then, as the crowds of whites were pouring in, Neil Watson didn't talk about politics. He just focused on crime. And as the whites were just pouring in to support him, because he wasn't racial, he wasn't political, he just focused on crime. The whites were pouring in. They were giving him support. And as he was getting more support, he was getting bolder and bolder. And then Neil Watson said, I think he was going to have some kind of, I'm not sure if it was a protest, but he was going to put thousands of people on the street and he was going to do something like a protest. Now, like I say, this is not actual history. I'm just talking by memory and showing you a few things, just so that you can get the gist of the story. So Neil Watson was then saying he can fight crime, he just needs money. and people were starting to give him money. People were starting to pour in and give him money. All of a sudden, the herd was there. The herd of whites was there, and the whites were giving him money. And Neil Watson was saying, I'm going to fight crime. I'm going to do things. I'm going to make things happen. And people were just loving it, okay? And people were opening up their pockets. People were pouring money into Neil Watson. And he was going to have, I think, a protest. And then, after people had sent him a lot of money, he didn't have the protest. Protest didn't happen. But meanwhile, all this time, the newspapers, even the normally anti-white, English-speaking, Jew-owned newspapers, were publishing his stuff and were not against him. But then when Neil went and said he was going to have a protest and no protest happened, then people started asking questions. Then I think some of the people who'd given money were pissed off. And the next thing you know is those same newspapers that had published pretty positive stuff about this crime website. And by the way, Neil Watson's messages weren't just published in South Africa. They went around the Western world. They moved in huge ways around the Western world. And people in America and everywhere were suddenly pouring in to his website to find out about this horrific crime in South Africa. Meanwhile, people like Adriana State of Censor Bugbear, who used to be a journalist herself, and I, the two of us had been doing our thing, but we didn't get any big publicity. Out of the blue came Neil Watson. Within 2 months, Neil Watson was shooting through the roof. Neil Watson had, I don't know how many supporters, but he was at least 10 times or more bigger than my website. I was amazed. Here I'd been slogging away for years, and this guy in like 2 to 2.5 months, he's going up exponentially. Everyone is just looking at his stuff. Everyone's watching him. And then he is going from strength to strength. The herd has arrived. The herd is pouring money in. The herd is happy with him. And the herd expects him to do something. But then he doesn't do it. And it may be that people went and complained to the newspapers. I think that is part of what happened. Then the newspapers started sending their journalists. They started hunting to find out, who is Neil Watson and what is going on? And the newspaper that exposed him, the newspaper that beat the others to the punch, was a newspaper that was called The Citizen. The Citizen was actually a small conservative newspaper. I used to like The Citizen. In the days of white rule, I used to read The Citizen a lot. I liked The Citizen. By then, the Citizen had already become watered down when Neil Watson was around. Nowadays, the Citizen isn't even conservative. So, the Citizen was the one that exposed him, and they had this headline, Exposed, crime website linked to a shady gay activist. And other newspapers started quoting the Citizen and doing their stuff. Next thing you know, they are busy telling you that Neil Watson isn't the guy's name. His real name is Johan Ace. He's actually Afrikaans. And now they are looking at money issues. And they are looking at the money issues. Next thing you know, they are talking about money, that people gave him money. He didn't use the money as he said he would, and he's up for fraud. Next thing you know, the next thing that happens, cops arrest him. Cops arrest him on charges of fraud. The money initially is not much, but now he's committed fraud. And do you know, he went on to doing 2 years jail time. He went and he did 2 years of jail time, and afterwards we never heard from him again. But enough was published in the newspapers that one could put two and two together. So 1 minute the crowd, the herd, is pouring in to support this guy in a big, big way. Then he displeases the crowd, plus the newspapers, being the slime that they are very quick to turn on anyone, and they went after him. I'll tell you what the secret to Yuan Ace's success was. I eventually managed to piece it together from the news stories. It turned out that Yuan Ace was a faggot. And being a faggot, he was a faggot activist. Since he was a gay activist, he was welcomed by newspapers. And he was probably part of a group of gays who were pumping out gay stuff. And so, being part of the gay setup, he is welcomed by all these newspapers. He's part of a bunch of gay activists. And then, because they are gays and they're pumping out their stuff, they have got a network. He's part of the gay network, not just in South Africa, but internationally. So he's part of the gay network everywhere. And the gay network has got access to the world's mass media. Jews and liberals are happy to deal with gays. They won't deal with Nazis. They won't deal with racists. But they will deal with gays. And so he's got these links to all this news media everywhere. So it turns out that Neil Watson, from what I could see, that when Neil Watson saw this crime stuff, people mentioning crime, people complaining against crime, what you had was a Afrikaans gay, but this Afrikaans gay has got links to worldwide gays and liberalism. And so this Afrikaans gay actually sees this opportunity to maybe do something good. I think he set out to do something good. I think some of his Afrikaans background must have kicked in and he knew, you know, crime, why don't I deal with crime? I know how to get news articles and press releases to newspapers in South Africa and newspapers in America and everywhere else. And I think that that is how this guy decided to tackle it. But he just did it under a pseudonym. So he used the pseudonym Neil Watson. He sounds like an Englishman. And he goes out there and he starts pumping out stuff about crime in South Africa. And all of a sudden, he's pumping it out. But he's pumping it out to the liberal media. And because it's coming from him, they are taking it and they're publishing it. And it's causing a stir. He's causing a huge stir because of his links from his gay activities. And that is the secret of how he gets enormous amounts of publicity. So everyone's pouring in and they are publishing his stuff. They're not always publishing his stuff, but he is also kind of controversial, but he's not controversial in a way that they hate. So he's not a Nazi, he's not a racist. And they are able to talk about this controversial guy and they do give him some publicity. But the only problem for him was when it came to taking money. So I'm not sure whether it was the blacks, whether it was liberals, who it was. But maybe somewhere along the line, someone started looking at the money stuff and then they started getting the cops involved. And from there onwards, it was downhill. Neil Watson, in total, only functioned for a couple of months. And when it was over, baby, he was in the court, he was being arrested, and they smacked him for fraud. The newspapers went crazy, they published all kinds of stories about him, etc. And in the beginning, he tried to put on a good image, like you see on the left there, where it says, "I'm not shady. Alleged sex blogger and theft accused Yuan Ace leaves the Kroonstad police station where he laid a complaint of intimidation against a politician this week." But Yuan Ace's days of trying to put on a good image, like in that photo, that didn't last long. Within a couple of weeks, this guy was taken down. This guy was hauled in front of the court. I think he got a 2-year jail sentence. And it was just astounding to see how much support he got because of the links that he had to the mass media, but also how quickly he was destroyed. He was like a flash in the pan. It was from nowhere right up to the top. Millions of people were coming to his website. He tries to play in the big boys' playing field, and the next thing is everyone tears him to pieces. Within a couple of months, it's over. Neil Watson is off to jail, and that's that. And Adriana State and I, we carried on plodding along like we always did. But it was fascinating to watch Neil Watson and how he rose and how the crowd came in, the herd came in. The herd came in a big way. The white South African herd came in a big way. They loved what he was doing, loved what he was saying. He obviously had a bit of experience from his gay activism, and he knew what to say and how to publish it and how to spread the word. And I must tell you, it was an amazing thing to see. But then with everyone watching him and enemies waiting to take him down, the slightest little wrong step, and they were over him like a bunch of hyenas, and they were there and they were ripping him to pieces. In no time at all, eaten up, destroyed, website gone. That's the end of Neil Watson. And he's gone, he's finished, he's forgotten, he's thrown on the rubbish heap. That's the end of it. So that gives you an example of how the herd works. And the herd will rush in with support, but if things go wrong, and if you've also got malicious actors like newspapers and mass media who are looking for a juicy story and someone to take down, then a slight wrong step and you're gone. So he may have been okay in gay activism, but you enter real world activism and you enter the conservative racial arena and people will rip you to pieces. And that was the end of Yuan Ace, aka Neil Watson. So this is where the white right has its moments. The white right has got its moments. It's got its Yuan Ace moments, whether it is 2017 and people in America getting together and they're busy doing something and the next thing you know, the Jews are all over them. The white right goes through these moments where it gets a lot of publicity and the herd suddenly likes something and the herd likes it and the herd goes for it. And we're winning and the white herd is suddenly awakened and the white herd is pouring in and things that are related to what we are doing can take off. Like Neil Watson was going to fight crime. He was going to be a crime fighter. I've got a lot of thunder and lightning around, so that is what's also coming up here and happening with my recording. But anyway, you get this kind of stuff that happens where the white right does something new or does something different and the herd sees something that it likes and the herd goes for it. And the herd goes for it with great energy. And Neil Watson could have been the beginning of something huge maybe. But this is also the other side of leadership. If you don't know your thing and you get into the game where you play with the big boys. If you don't know your thing and you meet up with the big boys are ruthless and they'll tear you down the moment that they can see the slightest thing, the slightest, tiniest mistake, and they'll just rip you to pieces. And that's what happened to Neil Watson, that he's doing great, but the slightest misstep, and in this case, the complaints were about money, and immediately someone comes up with a thought, this could be fraud. But in actual fact, he was probably just not able to do certain things, or he just hadn't thought his plan through, and he was working on the mood of the moment, maybe hoping to get enough money, etc. Whatever it was, he was out of his depth and the big boys just tear him to pieces and he's dead meat in no time at all. But I must tell you that I've seen many times where the white right can take off. I've seen many times where the white right can really take off and you can see the beginnings of the herd moving and doing stuff. But I've also seen, even in my own experience, that the herd can be scared away easily. The herd can be turned off quickly. So the herd can rush in, but the herd can also disappear. And I've seen this with other groups in the white right. I'm speaking about South African groups. Seen different groups grow. I've seen different groups suddenly drawing people. I've seen all kinds of people trying all kinds of nutty ideas. There was a bunch of white Christians who then decided that all the men of all the races must get together and do Christian stuff, and the Christian stuff will save South Africa. There was a guy who was a multimillionaire potato farmer who had his own Christian story, and people poured in, the herd poured in. They got lots of publicity because it wasn't white right stuff, but it was sort of softly conservative, etc. It drew lots of people in, and eventually that collapsed as well. That stuff lasted longer, but it also faded away. So in all these movements and all these things, there are many times when you can see the white herd is latching onto this thing. Something's happening that means something to the herd. It has value. They want to do something. Most of this stuff, most of all these things were either related to crime or related to white genocide or farm murders, etc. But we've had a number of these things over the years. And then you can see it's starting to get liftoff. Things are moving faster and faster. There's going to be liftoff. People are getting interested in this thing. People are pouring in. They're supporting this leader today. And this leader is drawing them. This leader and his group are drawing them. Or maybe two or three leaders with their groups are each drawing people. But things are moving and people are interested. And then if the herd doesn't get what it wants, or something happens, something goes wrong, then the herd splits. Eh? The herd is gone in no time at all. Harry Knussen, I've done the video about Harry Knussen. Harry Knussen and the Crusaders, that was an example where Harry Knussen was doing his thing. He was gaining some support, not support in the way that this guy had, but Harry Knussen had some people who were going to stand by him. But when Harry Knussen went to war, declared war on the government, and the next thing you knew, he's arrested. In an instant, the herd is gone. They're gone. Gone. So dealing with the herd is a very tricky business, and it's much more difficult than you think. However, I can tell you that on many occasions, even in South Africa, I've seen the herd awakening, and the herd is there. Another example was Black Monday. Black Monday was probably the greatest gathering of whites in the history of South Africa. Black Monday, where the people went to protest farm murders, that was the greatest gathering of whites ever in South Africa. It was huge. And there, the way that that came to nothing was when the South African government saw that some people had brought out the old flag of South Africa under apartheid. The government just went and made a law and said it's illegal to show that flag in public. And people quickly lost interest when they didn't see anything positive coming. And then, of course, when the flag issue came up, people were gone. So a thing that people in the white right need to realize is that the white right can take off. And I still want to tell you other stories that show that the white right can really fly. But you've got to be aware that when you are dealing in this game, don't be like Neil Watson and think you can just dive in, do something quickly, and so forth. There are other players in the game. They've been around longer and they're deadly, and they will destroy you. The moment you make a wrong move, they will destroy you quickly. The white right should focus on building up the people that are in the white right and the organizations in the white right, so that they are tougher, so that they can take beatings, so that they are more careful of the tricks the Jews can try, so that they can handle not only Jews' tricks, but the tricks that Jews have taught others or that others devise. You have to be a lot tougher if you want to get big, but you need a solid base before you can get big. And these flashes in the pan come and go. And here I am, I'm probably the only person left who even remembers Neil Watson and even remembers what happened to him. And for a short while, he drew a big audience, and he may have woken up some people in America even to the crime issue in South Africa. But the white right can take off, make no mistake. And in the case of Neil Watson, I was convinced that it was his links to mass media, because he was gay, that is what allowed him to get that kind of exposure. And that again shows me that you need to build up your group. You need to build up the ability to reach people. We all need to expand our bases and reach more people. And then we'll be able to do things. We will be able to draw crowds without using the evil mass media. And that may actually be a better thing. But the thing to be aware of is that when Jews play the game knowing all these tricks, and they'll come and hit you, man, and they'll try 101 different ways to destroy you. And Jews may coexist with you in the same country, but they will wage war against you in the same country, and you won't even really be aware of it. For us whites, we need to keep doing the foundational work so that we can get liftoff. And remember too, I will tackle this in other videos. Remember too, people are becoming unhappier. People are getting angrier. The herd is going to start looking for ways to hit back. The herd is going to get angrier and angrier. Our time is coming. Just keep on working on things, because I've seen many signs that whites are absolutely fine. I will tell you some other behind the scenes stuff that I saw from my early days of activism, where I saw other things that whites do that showed me that whites are absolutely fine. But Jews function on the herd principle, because Jews know that the herd can be scared easily and the herd can be pushed to one side easily if you use the right methods. So the moment that you say, oh, someone's a criminal, then that's already something that is going to drive huge numbers of people away from you. You just need a little bit of bad publicity and people are fleeing left, right, and center. And in my case, I saw people that I'd been speaking to, people that I'd met face to face, all of a sudden, they were gone, man. They were gone. They were history. Gone. One newspaper article and they're out of there. And they don't want to know anything further about you. So the white right also has to be tougher. And finally, one of the key things that Jews can do is not only can they scare the herd, but if they see the herd has got a leader, in this case, a guy like Yuan Ace, if they see the herd has got a leader, all they need to do is knock out the leader. If they knock the leader out, the herd will disappear. The herd will be gone. Happened to Neil Watson, happened to Harry Knudsen. Just one bit of news in the newspaper and boom, everyone is gone. So remember, in the white right, the Jews will try to chase the herd around, scare the herd. If they can't do that, they'll divide the herd. They'll get the herd to fight each other. If they see that there's a leader, there's a potential leader of the herd, they'll go after the leader. They just have to slander the leader or make insinuations about the leader, and the herd is gone. Jews play these games all the time, and they are old hands at playing these games. Keep these things in mind. The white right is a hectic place to be, but the white right is the only game in town that is serious. It's the only game in town that's gonna do anything that has meaning. And from what I can see, the white right is getting its act more and more into gear as people learn about secrecy, people learn about checking who enters your organization. All these things, as the white right hangs in there, all these things are helping to make the white right tougher. But the people that we could get, our own people, large numbers of them are still in the herd mentality. They may come easily, but they can flee easily. And Jews are not going to give you free publicity. Jews are trying by all means to keep people away from us. Why? Because they know that we're the real thing. And of course, the other thing that they can do is they can create fake things when they need to. However, people are getting more sophisticated and they can't just do it that easily. But they can cause big mayhem. You will discover that every aspect of the white movement is a nightmare. Why? Because Jews don't want anything racial, anything national socialist, anything Nazi succeeding. They don't want that at all. They They see it for what it is. They see it as a big threat to their stuff. And that's why they'll pull out all the stops. When we discuss more military stuff, you will see how important leadership is. Leadership is everything. And leadership can take a herd of sheep and turn them into a herd of lions. And that's what we'll discuss a lot. We will look closely at leadership because that's the place we need to go to. But be aware at all times that Jews think big and operate big, and they are trying to stop the herd from responding in a natural way. They are trying to stop the herd from suddenly going and following a particular leader that's going to take them somewhere important. With regard to the damage that Jews cause to the white right, the Jews are doing absolutely everything to make sure that the white right is dysfunctional. They use every mechanism. They try to stop money. They try to make people afraid of creating websites. They try to make people afraid of creating groups. They try to make people afraid of joining groups. They do anything and everything to make people fear the white right, misunderstand the white right, etc. And it's a very successful thing that they're doing. They often keep very clever people away from the white right. There are very clever people who are also rather cowardly or just very wary of getting involved in anything that appears to be nasty. And so they stay away from the white right. They don't want to get involved. You also get people with money. There are white people with lots of money, hey? I've seen this. There are white people with lots of money, but they don't want their businesses affected. They don't want to lose their bank accounts. They don't want to get bad reputations either among their customers or among other businessmen, etc. So because they've got a lot to lose, they are even more afraid of dealing with the white right. And then Jews run around telling people who are, let's call it, upper class, the moneyed people. They run around saying, oh, those racists, they're just stupid. They're just stupid, violent idiots. And the whites at higher levels, the whites who are, let's call it, upper class or semi-upper class or elite, they either listen to the Jews and trust the Jews, or they don't want to get involved in this thing. So in many ways, what is happening is that you've got the whites who are middle class and lower who really have something to say. They really have got a serious problem. But Jews have created so many rifts in so many ways that nobody listens to them. And Jews themselves know that the middle class is where the action is, that the middle class can take them down, the middle class can overthrow the government. They know all these things. And they are trying by every single means to stop whites from being able to come together as a group. And because they live amongst us, they know all the tricks. I still need to show people examples of Jews deliberately spying on whites and then exposing whites, merging with us, causing schisms, or even coming among us, talking to us, and then running off, writing books, doing videos and documentaries, and doing all kinds of things to discredit us and harm us. So one thing you got to keep in mind is that the white right takes a lot of beatings. But the white right's taking a lot of beatings because Jews know that in the white right, the most dangerous people, the people who can take them down, are the Nazis. The people who can take them down are the racialists. And so they will do anything and everything to protect themselves, to protect their power, to protect their positions. The Jews don't want to leave America, etc. They are living it up. They are enjoying it. They are whoring around, stealing and carrying on like crazy. And they are loving every minute of it. And the same is true for Jews in other countries. So for them, they know that this thing coming from the common white people. This is a dangerous thing. It needs to be smashed. So because all of these things happen to us and we are just functioning with our little bit of resources that we've got, then we become despondent. And when people leave and people give up, then we become despondent. And so the white right has got a very hard time. But I want to tell you, the white right is the only action in town. The white right is the only thing that can change anything, but it's going to be rough. And you need to understand that, and we all need to do our best. And I will return to Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler was fanatical. Adolf Hitler was determined. Adolf Hitler faced 1,001 different problems. The Nazis faced huge problems. In the early days of the Nazis, people struggled like hell. People struggled like crazy to get funds and to organize and so forth. It was nasty. They even had to create the SA. They had to create a military force, a semi-military force, a paramilitary force would be the proper term. They had to create a paramilitary force in order that Hitler can just give speeches. It's that simple. They needed a paramilitary force in order to protect Hitler and their meetings against vicious, brutal assault. That stuff has not changed. And Jews will move in and do everything they can to totally upset everything we've got. And this stuff will carry on. Giving in, becoming despondent, and running away isn't going to solve any problems. You're just going to have to realize that there are some things that are so critical that you are in a battle. This is a battle, and we're in a battle, and the Jews are coming from all sides, and they want to break us up. They want to destroy us, etc. There are also times when we win. There are many indications that we win and succeed as well. Take, for example, the way in which we pull our data. We pull our data and then we point to the Jews and we say, oh, look at these Jews. These Jews got up to this. These Jews got up to that. Jews lied about this. Jews did that thing. Why do you think that Jews are running around censoring everything and removing everything? Why? It's because they know that those things that we are pointing out are weapons, that we are weaponizing facts, we are weaponizing their actions. And so what they do is they run around and get rid of the evidence. They get rid of the evidence because when we get hold of the evidence, we are hurting them. Now, people constantly think completely incorrectly that Jews will come out and admit that we're right. This does not happen in conflict. The enemy is never going to admit that you're right. Never ever in a million years are the Jews going to admit that we're right. The Jews will never do that. So all that they do is they try to hide things away so that we don't have ammunition to hit them with. Now, there are some things where it's very hard for them to hide things away. But when it comes to things like books and related material, that's easy for them to go after. Books and videos and anything that can be communicated electronically. So they go for it. And they are getting rid of stuff that we can use because when we use it, it's hurting them. The censorship is there because we are successful at weaponizing data and facts. So that is what is going on here. This is a struggle. This is a battle. And we ourselves have to not only hold our thing together as the middle class and the lower class, we've still got to try and find all the other whites, the whites who've run away, the whites who are too scared, the nerds and the clever guys who are too scared to come and join the fight, the wealthy who've got too much to lose to get them to join the fight, to get them to support us, etc. This is one hectic thing. And Jewry is constantly looking at us as a group. And they're whacking us, man. If they see a group of whites who are getting their act together and they're starting to get strong and determined, they've got to go after them, okay? Like they did in 2017. And if they see a leader that's arising, the leader's got to be smashed down. Because they know that if a leader comes along and people go with the leader, that this can cause huge problems for them. They know if a group is functioning and the group is popular and other people are going to join the group, that that thing can become dangerous. They are constantly looking for the threats that can come from the whites. Jews know that whites are clever. Jews know that whites don't need government funding in order to come and hurt them and defeat them. That whites, using our own creativity, our own natural organization, that we can hurt them, that we can cause huge problems for them. They know it. They know it from the past. They know it from ancient times. They know it from Christian times. They know it from the times of Hitler and Mussolini. They've seen that when the common man gets angry, the common man can make life hell for them. And they know what's on the line, okay? They know that expulsion is coming, that whites want them expelled. They are looking at the things that whites are saying. They are infiltrating the white right. They are reading what's on our websites. They are looking at what's on our videos. They know what we want, and they know it's all bad for them. So they will do everything they can to cause mayhem, problems, damage for us. These people are old hands at messing with whites. They've been doing it in Europe for more than 2,000 years. They've been playing this game. They played it in most countries in Europe. This is an old game. And they know that this game will end very badly for them. And they will use every trick, every form of power that they can. And we've just got to be able to become tougher, become more organized, so that their tricks and tactics have got less and less of an effect on us. Jews don't want whites to get out from under their influence. And the last thing they want is a leader who's going to tell the whites that it's okay to go after the Jews. Jewry will work day and night to destroy this. So just be aware that they think at a high level, and that for us, it's very painful as we are functioning in our small ways. For us, it's very painful because we get a kick over here and a beating over there. So we get very irritated and it's very frustrating. But we got to do what we got to do, and there's no shortcuts. There's no easy way out of this. If there was an easy way out of this, there would have been 1,000 Neil Watsons. But it doesn't work that way. People who have it easy, people who walk in thinking they got a quick solution, they're going to be destroyed. It's quick, it's dirty, and they'll be gone. Our enemies are embedded in the system. They've got a lot of fingers in the pie. They've got a lot of links. They've got a big network. It's going to be a long fight. But all it's going to take is the herd in the correct mood, maybe angry people, and us continuing with our work, getting our methods slicker. And one day, the right conditions are going to come. And boom, we'll take off like Neil Watson did. But when we take off, it'll be for real. And we'll be much tougher. And they won't be able to destroy us. But it's not something that's going to be done easily. It's going to take hard work. Anything is possible if you focus on it and you work on it. And activism and spreading the message is the most important thing all of us can do. That is laying the groundwork for the big liftoff that's coming. The big liftoff is still going to happen. And when it happens and the leaders and the people are in the right frame of mind, it's going to be a liftoff that can't be stopped. Thank you very much for listening today. I hope that you learned something new today. Look after yourselves and take care. We'll be chatting again soon.
If you don't see the end, if you don't see the top, don't stop. We know you'll win. Every fight, you'll fight, every game.